Welcome to fourthstream.com. Today we're talking about how to live an overcoming life when we have not only other people's perfections, but our own.
Did you say perfections instead of
imperfections? Oh, did I say perfections?
Yeah, well, you know, some people have perfections. Primarily God has perfections, but yeah.
Your ears just don't work.
It's one of my imperfections. You know, it's really interesting because we all want things to be right. Mm-hmm. You know, I put this in the post, you know, you look in the mirror and you go, oh man, I changed this. But you know, that's just life is just that way. There is always something different. And you know, you and I will sit in the mall and sit down and we'll look around and go, man, we really are above average.
Or we go, we fit in.
Totally. But you know, the idea of living with imperfections and living in an imperfect world, Jesus embodies an understanding of that better than anybody because, you know, he was perfect. So to think about Jesus being the perfect human being and then to negotiate being human and being surrounded where everyone else was imperfect.
I think one of the hard things for me, all my life, I've heard that Jesus is fully human and fully God. And while that's true, I think that was hard on me. It was unhelpful to hear that because when I would see Jesus being tested, I felt and I actually believed, and honestly, I probably still struggle with this today, feeling like, yeah, but he's not exactly like me, is he? Because he's fully God. And so I have to make myself really see him as a human because I tend to go, yeah, he has one up on me all the time because he's God, of course. His testing wasn't as hard as mine.
Well, that's why, you know, when I finally found this verse in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 7, it says, and I memorized it because it was so striking to me based on what you were just talking about right there, who in the days of his flesh offered up prayers with loud crying and tears to the one who was able to save him from death, his father, you know, and he was heard because of his reverent submission.
I love that verse.
Well, and it's just such a great picture to recognize that, yes, he was lofty from a human perspective, but also from a human perspective, he was 100% human. So that's why it says that he understands all of our weaknesses and he's been tempted in all ways as we are, but he was found without sin because he gave perfect responses.
Right. The interesting thing about these verses and imperfections that we're alluding to and going to talk about, for years, I wanted a deeper walk with God. I wanted better character, you know, be a deeper person with some wisdom. What I discovered was that these things, that these imperfections are the exact things that God uses to hone me. And if I can work through those, not even work through them, but in spite of them, and deal with them honestly instead of sort of ignoring or avoiding them, that's what makes me have depth of character.
Well,
and I can't have it without dealing with those things.
Yes, and imperfection is it's an ally in God's goal for us to be purified and to be changed. Imperfection, rather than looking at it as something that's frustrated, God wants us to walk toward it and recognize that that's just exactly what Jesus did. And he asks us to follow in his footsteps. Mm-hmm.
So one thing that's hard is being misunderstood. And so in being misunderstood, if I just always like ignore it and don't deal with my feelings about it, because, you know, being misunderstood is pretty deeply explosive. It causes such deep frustration.
Brings out a lot of emotions.
Yeah. And somehow I imagine it just rolled off Jesus, but I know it didn't. Somehow it gave him depth of character and it caused him to depend on God. And that makes me willing to try it, at least, to try to work through it.
Well, and all of the VIP type people in Israel didn't understand him because they totally had a different paradigm that they were working from. So Jesus was dealing with that constantly. That's why there was so much conflict between he and the scribes and the Pharisees, because they were on a different page. Mm-hmm. He was on a heart page. They were on a religion page.
One of the things that I look at is being insulted, just the imperfection of how I deal with that, how sometimes I redefine what being insulted is. Sometimes it's I feel slighted, or there are just different things and I want to give it a different word. But if I really call it what it is, then I have to honestly deal with, do I believe that God has my best interest in mind? Yes. Do I really want to work through this, or do I want to call it something else and just sort of sweep it under the rug and not grow from it?
In this study down below at the bottom of the post where it talks about perfect example principles, you just brought out the passage from 2 Corinthians 12:10, where basically we're not supposed to return insult for insult. This mm-hmm. is another passage I'm talking about now. But the idea is that we have been, God has worked spiritually in our lives so that we can bless other people. And that's what Jesus did. Now, it didn't mean that Jesus didn't have conflict, and it didn't mean that he didn't address the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said some pretty harsh things to the religious leaders. But the reality was that he didn't take it personally and throw back a personal insult. He basically just took what they were saying and said, don't you understand the scriptures or the power of God? And that's totally different than returning insult for insult. Mm-hmm.
And all of these things are basically a form of suffering. Being misunderstood is a form of suffering. Loneliness, it's a big issue. Now, that's never been a huge issue for me, but I know it is for a lot of people, and it really is a form of suffering. And so if Jesus suffered and could get through it, knowing that God was going to carry him, you know, I have to believe that same thing and work on it.
And there's another passage, too, out of Ephesians that talks about when your hopes are dashed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you are hoping in something and it falls apart, you know, and you just, it makes you feel so low because you are counting on something and your hopes are dashed. And that's part of the imperfection that we have to deal with, because things just don't work out always the way we would hope that they would.
And one of the things I love about the Bible is that, you know, we talk about hopes being dashed. There are actually scriptures that deal with that. There's one in Proverbs that says, unrelenting disappointment leaves us heartsick, but a sudden good break can turn life around. And I just read that and go, okay, even that is addressed in the Bible, just being disappointed over and over.
One of the perfect example principles on this list here from down below in the post is when even your friends desert you. And I've got that passage in John 18 where Jesus and Peter are having that interaction when Peter is denying him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just just think about from a human perspective how it would have felt for Jesus to be deserted. And that's why when it gets to the point where he's on the cross and he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's not just a line. That's not just a line from a script.
Right.
That's a heart that's crying out because
he really felt like he'd been deserted.
And even by his father.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had to process everything he was experiencing from a human perspective, not just from a God perspective. He had to die, just like we'll have to die. And just mm-hmm. like we have to face death. And that means that God had to face it in faith just like we do.
One of the things I enjoy about the passage you just talked about, Peter denying Christ, is that first he denies him, and then someone who was in the garden says, "Now I'm pretty sure I saw you there. I really think that was you," and he denies it again. And then Jesus walks by and looks him in the eye. And it's such a touching thing, because you don't at all get the impression that Jesus is looking at him in an accusing way,
yes.
but rather, I get it. It was just, it's just hard to stick with people. I just, that moment when I read that, I am so touched by it, that he gave such forgiveness right on the spot to someone who had just denied him, abandoned him. And I think about my life, you know, that takes me a long time to work through it when I feel, you know, cast away or abandoned or whatever.
Well, even when you're talking about that, just think how awful Peter must have felt when the rooster crowed, because, you know, God said it was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And then when he, you know, days later, when he's standing on a beach and Jesus is there with them and he asks him the question, you know, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?"
Like, come on.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's just heart-wrenching to me.
Yeah.
And yet, God does all of that to lift Peter up and make him just one of his pillars in the early church and in the launching of the gospel.
One of the things that teaches me, too, when he asked him that three times to equal the three times he denied him, I just feel like God is willing to get to the deepest part of us to heal. It's not just a surfacey, you know, okay, it's all one and done. It's this idea that he wants to heal us to the deepest parts, deliver us from whatever we're feeling guilty about or, whatever.
Just a couple more principles from the Perfect Examples Principles Sheet, as we're calling it here. When you see other people suffer, I mean, you think about the suffering that's in the world. It's always been here. And think about how people respond to that. Some people are drawn to God, and some people become mm-hmm. angry with God when they see injustice and see other people suffer. And that could be one of the greatest, stretches of our faith when we see other people suffer. And the passage I have here is Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you know, I would have gathered you together like a hen gathers her chicks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jesus had that feeling for the world and for the people of God. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Check it out. There's also a passage in Philippians 1. What's the reward for overcoming in the midst of imperfection? Because there is a reward. And if we're willing to, rather than succumb to the imperfection or the discouragement that comes from it, when we're willing to become overcomers in God, well, it's a huge, huge deal. Check it out. Hey, thanks for listening today. Guess what? We'll be back next week.